Let me go back. Iya Oyinleye, a high priestess, medium, and mystic, was born in the Gullah Geechee community of Savannah, Georgia. Throughout her beautiful journey of spiritual development, Iya J has been blessed and marked by highly reputable elders of both Cuban and traditional African practicing lineages as Iya Nifa, Iya Larisha, Olashun, and Yaya Nganga. As the problem solver, bringing a background of over 20 years in software engineering, computer science, she is a creator and owner of the Hoodoo Spirit app, first of its kind, designed to provide a brief glimpse of the spirits and energy surrounding a person. As the lover and active practitioner of occult sciences, metaphysics studies, and esoteric arts, Iya J's mission is to bring global awareness of tradition of all her works. Of traditional Congolese spirituality. Let me go back. It is Iya J's mission to bring global awareness of traditional Congolese spirituality, as it is the core foundation of all her works. Iya J redefines the notion of conjure woman, and along with others of her kind, shifts the new era wave of spirituality to a sincere queendom and power. So thank you. We are glad to have you here. We know that you have much to share with us. Ladies, there will be time for Q&A at some point in Iya's presentation. If you'll just let us know when that is. So welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you, Ashe. Greetings, everyone. I am so happy to be doing this presentation. I've been planning and preparing like Beyonce. This is like Christmas Day for me. So I want again to thank Queen Leah for the introduction. And I'm going to switch my screen and try to set up for the slides that I have to present. But while I do that, I wanted to ask if there are any ladies. Well, first of all, is it all women? Looks like all women.
That's correct, yes.
Okay. Is there any ladies from the South or anyone that is initiated in any of the Congolese spiritual traditions? Nobody from Savannah? I thought I had somebody in here from Savannah, Georgia. I guess not. Okay. Let me switch over.
So, Iya, what I will do is I'm going to make you the host, and okay. That will allow you to share your screen, okay?
Okay.
All right. Okay, that's done.
Okay, let's see, share, okay. We'll switch over to.
I'm from Savannah.
I thought I had somebody in here saying it was gone. Well, at least, are you Anna? Yeah. All right, so let me see. I'm trying to figure out this screen thing.
At the bottom of your screen, do you see the green share icon? There you go. Okay. It's working.
Okay, you guys can see that?
Yes.
Okay. Let's see. Moving. Okay. All right. Okay, so you all can see the slide.
Yes, Iya.
Okay, cool. All right, so I'm going to start out by just explaining a little bit about myself, sharing my name, the meaning of my name, and a little bit more about my background, really more about my character. So my Ifa name is Ifa Busayo. My Oshun name is Oyinleye. So it's Ifa Busayo Oyinleye Ajala. And I'm known a lot more commonly by Iya J because my birth name begins with the letter J. So people call me Iya J for sure. Ifa Busayo means Ifa adds to my joy. I've recently had a couple of elder Iyas tell me that they see Ibu Kole and Ifa Busayo. Ibu Kole is a path of Oshun that is connected to the vulture. Oyinleye, broken down completely, means honey bird. It also, depending on where you put the accent marks, it means honey has prestige. So it's pretty cool because a lot of my spiritual names have a bird associated to it. And when I was a younger child, my nickname was Bird. So I have a strong connection to the whole bird totem. But Ifa Busayo Oyinle Ajala, I have Congolese names as well. But in Palo Mayombe, we don't usually share our Congo names. But my Congo name, the meaning of it, one of them is connected to sight. My padrino would name us all connected to some form or part of the body to signify the unity. So my name was connected to the eyes. So I was the eyes of the house. as far as my character and who I am and how I communicate, I don't necessarily see myself as a teacher. I see myself as, you know, just someone that is typical girl, Southern girl from the South. This is my logo. And so I communicate better when it's a comfortable environment. I like for things to be relaxed. I'm a Taurus, so I like comfort, relaxed, you know, real, authentic communication. So if there's at any point in time, if you all have a question, I do have a lot of information to go over, a lot. So I want you to be comfortable and I want you to let me know if you have a question, but I'm hoping I can get through most of it and a lot of questions at the end because I don't want to miss anything. So again, you know, communication, I want to keep it informal. I want to keep it real relaxed and I want to take you all on an adventure. I want it to be an experience more than a lecture. So, you know, we're going to take flight and I'm going to do some prayers. I'm going to call in the spirits. And I'm going to have everyone just get into the mode of spirit, really to take you into the middle world. So we're going to see how this goes. I have a disclaimer here that I would like for everything that I share to remain amongst the group of people that are attending right now and the people, of course, who purchase the lecture later on. But I put this disclaimer here because right now we live in an era where, you know, it's really a lot of sharing through social media. It seems like there's not a lot of secrecy as it used to be. So I'm going to be sharing a lot of my personal experiences, personal pictures, and I'm going to scratch the surface of just a little bit of secretive information. Really, it's information that you could probably find on the internet because people share so much. But for the most part, I want to keep it, you know, secretive. That's actually what the occult is secrecy. So, you know, that's sharing in what we have here in this session and keep it in this session. So we'll keep a little bit of sacredness to things when you keep the secrets. Again, I'm from Savannah, Georgia, too. I want to point that out. And there's one attendee here that is from Savannah, so that's awesome. So in sharing about myself, I decided to do a little collage. And I want to move through this fairly quickly because I have so much information to share. But this slide really shows through pictures and a little bit of a timeline about what I practice, some significant things that occurred during the time after I started my journey. I would have to say probably started around 2007, but it's hard to really pinpoint, but that's the time frame that I give myself. And it really happened after a lot of life changes. I started waking up, as I said here in the paragraph above. But some of the significant things that happened since then, I had a spiritual house called Isis Moon, a physical house here in the Atlanta, Georgia area. I was featured on Love and Hip Hop. One of the practitioners rented some space for me in the house, and she did a reading on Love and Hip Hop. So the house itself was featured on Love and Hip Hop. I started an Ile with Baba Shango Sakin Ajala in 2016, the Ifa Orisha Ile. 2018 is when I released the Hoodoo Spirit app. And I just, it was like, I'll never forget, it was literally like January 3rd or something like that. It's my daughter's birthday. And I woke up with all these ideas. Spirit was giving me all types of ideas. So with my computer science background, I decided I wanted to do an app that no one else had created yet. So from that, I started creating the app. I released the app really like a month later, and a few other things. I added to my services. And just this year in 2019, I'm actually a new eNIFA, so I'm still in training as an eNIFA. But with my most recent initiation to EFA is where I felt like I was brought like a full circle with my ancestors. So I went to the Congo this year, and I've made some alliances and forming a house, a spiritual house, with my Congolese elders there. And I'm forming a new branch of my spiritual house specifically for traditional based Congolese spirituality. So these pictures show a few of the traditions that I'm initiated into. I started out as a hoodoo practitioner. I practice espiritismo, doing misas. I don't do misas as much as I used to, but that was my basis, and then I moved along here. These are just a few more pictures of some of the things that I've done in the community, just to give you guys an idea of what I've been doing. And I'm gonna let that, you know, marinate for a second, but just general pictures of Oshun Festival, Shango Festival, some pictures with me and Baba, rituals at the ocean. And I'm gonna get right into it. So with this slide is showing the order of what I would like to cover, but I know how spirit works, so we're gonna see what happens. When spirit takes over, you just never know what happens. But this is the order of what I would like to cover and the things that I'm gonna go over today. I'm gonna start out with talking about the importance of Congo for me, and from there I'm gonna do an invocation of the spirit. So that's why I want you guys to be very relaxed, or you ladies, to be very relaxed. I'm looking at this like we're taking flight, you know. So this is a little journey we're taking as birds. So we're gonna fly out with this. So I want y'all to really go into spirit, allow yourself to connect to spirit as I invoke these energies and call in protection and blessings for us. So for me, Congolese spirituality is very unique, and it's always been something that I felt even before I knew what Congo spirits were. Before I even knew what it was, I started out like I said as a hoodoo practitioner, but I always knew I had very strong warrior spirits with me. I didn't even intend, or I didn't plan to get initiated into anything, actually, when I first started out. I thought I was just going to be a hoodoo practitioner. So as I moved forward, everything was going great. Actually, when I started out with hoodoo, the very first, I guess you would call spell, the very first thing that I did, it worked amazingly. And I was just gone from there. So everything was going well, and then I hit a brick wall. And things started shifting in my life, and I needed help. So I ended up speaking with some individuals that took me to my first Misa. At my first Misa is where I found out that the spirits that I had walking with me, at least a good bit of them, were Congolese spirits. And from there, I started researching more and understanding what they were, and I got initiated into Palo, and it just amped up what I already had. So I'm going to try to keep my stories to a minimum because I have so much information to go over. But, it's just, and then the music, the drums, it's Congo drums move my spirit. I'm a medium, so whenever the Congo drums start playing, I move. Let's see, what else can I say? Also, I had not felt compelled to do any type of ancestry DNA checks or, you know, testing or anything like that until this year. Right before I went to the Congo, I felt compelled to check to see. I always knew I had Congo spirits with me, so I didn't feel like, oh, well, you know, I want to know. I knew, but this year I decided to do a DNA test. So I did it with African ancestry. Not ancestry, because the African ancestry test tells you exactly what tribes you are from. From there, I did my father's side first. So I went back to Savannah. I had my daddy take the test. And sure enough, he came back with four tribes from the Kingdom of Congo. So it was no other place. It was the Kingdom of Congo. The area that they came from was modern day Gabon. So I'll show you guys on the map the different countries and the places that they considered to be a part of the Kingdom of Congo. So there were four tribes, the Bateke, the Bakota, Fong, and Tsoko. So that's just a little bit about why the Congo spirits are important to me. And I'm gonna go into this invocation. And like I said, I wanna make this an experience for y'all. So I have a little music to play in the background as I do my invocation. In Kimbo Zambi and Pungu, Misakula we need to Tambika. Bakulu Bakuna Mbanza. Misakula Wunita Tambika. Mpandu Zaba Mama. Misakula Wunita Tambika. Mpungu Zai Toto. Ntangu. Ngunda. Mbwatetete. Misakula Wunita Tambika. Nkuyu. Nkunji. Mpangu Mazulu. Nsazi. Masangu. Mpungu. Nisakula wunita tambaka mpungu mamba mamungwa. Mama kalunga. Maza masari. Nisakula wunita tambaka. Zabi tembo. Mpungu mama chola. Sente ndoki. Nisakula wunita tambaka. Bakulu zaba bateke bantu. Bakota bantu. Fang bantu. Tusogo bantu. Nisakula wunita tambaka, ya ntoto ya chia, ya Congo. Biba bia Congo, inkaka za Congo. Nisakula wunita tambaka, kwe bizi mbanza. Luatusa muna, na bihu nzibieto. Muna mpungu, ya tata mpungu, ya mama mpungu. Toboturi matondo. I'm going to also play a prayer from my Congolese counterpart because my spirits can be a little hot, so his are cool in some essence, at least in his prayer. So we're going to bring in some cool energy as well from the Congo. I'll turn this down, make sure y'all can hear it.
Mtuwe balobi, tuatuka kumbaza Kongo. Tunabingula bakaka zetu na biba yetu. Andre Bernard Matua, Simon Kimbangu, Kama Mungkala, Weta Mbogo, Filipe Bumba, Matai Mwanda, Gabio Tsuni, Gavila Mbaza Kongo, Lutomboka, Mungamui, Mukandra Ndombi, Ilabulubokela, Mvitaza Tumwana, Kongoli za kimbebe. Musalisa mbila mabantu na mfugisa makana mabantu. Enalombo kuta mika babuta. Enalombo kwela mika babuela. Enalombo sala mika basala. Ika mama je kabagana lusa kumunu na lulendo. Mzambi ambogo tulendo.
Did you all hear that? You could? Okay. All right, so, you know, don't be surprised if you feel anything, or maybe you don't, but if you do, Congolese energy, Congolese spirits can bring a very hot feeling, at least for me. My whole body, my entire body usually feels like it's on fire when they get close. So, but there are also some cooler energies as well, some water spirits. So I'm going to go over here with this slide, the Kingdom of Congo. This is actually a picture that I took while I was there. My experience while I was there, matter of fact, I wanted to start recording my time to make sure I didn't go over, but I guess one second, let me make sure I put my timer on so I'll know where I'm at with time. Okay, sorry. All right, so this is on the banks of the Congo River in Brazzaville, Congo. When I first got to the Congo, I've been to Africa 3 times. So this was my first time going to the Congo, and it absolutely was breathtaking. I will not lie to you. It was amazing. I was never a, what you would call like a Black Panther fan, you know, the movie. It was a good movie or whatnot, but I wasn't one of those people that was going crazy when the movie came out. But I literally felt, when I walked on this, when I stepped on the banks of this river, that's where I felt I was. During my research, I was already researching how the Congo was connected to ancient Kemet and the language of the Bantu people. But when I got there, it really hit me because I was having epiphanies and visions that they were some of the most memorable visions that I've ever had throughout my journey. And what I started seeing was pyramids. I saw pyramids. Of course, this is all in my spirit, in my mind's eye. I'm seeing pyramids on the bank of this river. I'm seeing barges coming up and down. And it looked like ancient Kemet. It looked like Egypt to me. So, you know, I'm thrown back because I'm kind of like out of it in spirit, like, wait a minute, I'm in Congo, but why am I seeing this? But my ancestors started speaking to me, and they're telling me, like, you know, we go way back. So I'm going to show y'all some maps. And they're also, you know, it also showed me that because when we think about pyramids, we think about Egypt or ancient Kemet. But who's to say that pyramids and things like that did not, you know, were not all over Africa? So these were the visions that I was seeing in the Congo. So there's definitely a link between Congolese people of the Bantu ethnic group. Well, the Bantu is the ethnic group. The Congolese tribes are part of that ethnic group. And so I'm going to show y'all some migration of where they could have came from and all that stuff. But there's definitely a link to ancient Kemet there. Within the Congo, I have that movie, the Wakanda movie, the Black Panther movie. I actually found some links. I saw links when I saw that movie, but while I was there, all this stuff started really coming to light. Also, I want to point out that it's interesting because before I went to the Congo, people were calling me like, you know, be careful. They got Ebola in the Congo, and it's the war zone, and it's this and it's that. I didn't see any of that. There is a reason why they want to keep people out of the Congo. It's a beautiful place. Our people, just like in other places in Africa, they are impoverished, but the landscape is beautiful. It looks like something in that movie. Literal waterfalls, rushing rivers. The fruit looks like it came off a magazine. The Congo has so many minerals. Everything that's in our cell phone comes from the Congo. That purple plant that they have in that movie, it does exist. Black diamond mines. I haven't seen those. My elders, you know, that I didn't get to know black diamond mines, but I'm told that there are black diamond mines in Congo. The leopard in the movie, the Black Panther, of course, the Black Panther is the totem, but in the Congolese spiritual houses in Congo, the leopard is actually the totem. So there were a lot of things that I found connected to, you know, movies and things that we're told. I actually saw this for myself in the Congo, and I just couldn't get past the beauty of the place. So I'm going to go over some maps, and we'll go over some rulers. the tribes, the ancestors, and the different branches of Conk. I'm trying to move through as quickly as I can. Please forgive me if I'm going fast, because I know I have a lot of information, and I tend to do that as a former engineer. I pack a lot of stuff in there. So if there's questions, let me know at the end, and try to just enjoy the experience and write down your questions as we go along. But definitely also, again, I want to point out the fact that that Ebola cases and stuff like that in the Congo, I think they said it was one or two cases, and it was like going from Georgia to California four times from where I was. But they make it seem like it's just this horrible place. Not so. Okay, so the Kingdom of Congo. This is a map that shows, supposed to show the Kingdom of Congo. They make it look as if it's this little tiny piece of a place that is in West Central Africa. But my elders are telling me the Kingdom of Congo look more like this, this darker green area here. Generally speaking, it would be, it would encompass the Congo Basin countries. So that is Gabon, Republic of Congo, Democratic Republic of Congo, Angola, and just going up and down the Congo River. But one of my elders, he loves to say that the Congo is the heart of Africa. Everything else is the arms and the legs, but Congo is the heart of Africa. And when I look at that map, this map right here, that's what I think of. It makes me, it is definitely the center of Africa. Now, this is some migration maps. The Bantu people are an ethnic group that the Congolese people are a part of. And the Bantu people spread all over Africa, but there are, it's a controversial type of topic. Some people say that the Bantu people started, or their homeland was in Cameroon somewhere up here, and they migrated to the west, east, and south. But there are sources of people that say that they actually came from the Nile Valley and migrated to the other parts, and definitely to Congo. So there, I don't know which way they went. I didn't live back then, but I know there's definitely a link from my spirit. I go by what my spirit says. So there's a link there. Now, going over some rulers, I wanted to explain to you guys what the meaning of Congo is, the founders, how Christianity started playing into Congolese spirituality. And I definitely have to cover Queen Nzenga, because she's just so badass. Got to go over Queen Nzenga. But there's a Congo proverb that says, the Congo belongs to a strong hunter. If you're not strong enough, you cannot rule it. A weak person can never expect to rule a Congo group. And that is because the Congo people are very dominant, very strong. It's all across Africa, I would say, people, their tribes who are warrior tribes. But for the sake of our topic today, the Congolese people are known to be warriors. They're known to be very strong in their identity. One of my elders, he still says that. He's like, you won't have any problems with Congo people unless you insult our identity. So identity and who they are, they hold very strongly. The meaning of Congo actually means a hunting place. And it was founded, the story is that it was founded by a hunter who was hunting like an antelope or something. He was following this animal through the forest. And as he follows this animal through the forest, the animal comes, brings him upon this place that he's just mesmerized by. He's mesmerized by the beauty of the place, and he calls it Congo. Now, going into the kings and the rulers, one of the more significant, well, these are actually three significant figures, but two when it comes to Christianity and enslavement. And I want to point out, too, that it's important to know the history of a people when you're trying to understand their spirituality, because you understand what they went through to bring them to where they are. But the king Nzinga, Nkuwu, was the first king that we have identified as the person who converted to Christianity first through the Portuguese when they came to the Congo. Now, I'm imagining these people. I want y'all to use your imagination. Like I said, this is a spiritual experience. I'm imagining the Portuguese people rolling up, floating on a ship into the Congo on the river or the ocean. Because when I was in Brazzaville, it was 4 hours away from the ocean. It's like going from Atlanta to Savannah, Georgia. So you got the river, you got the ocean, you got all the, you got mountains there. They're rolling up, floating, and they see this beautiful place. Okay, so they come to take over, pretty much. They convert the king to Christianity. Of course, they were already practicing their own traditional belief system. And the Congo people, just like other Africans, you know, they didn't really look at it as, oh, we're changing over. They just embraced some of the concepts because they were already familiar with the concepts. Now, this particular king, he did not stay a Christian, though. He converted at first. The year that they have is 1485, but shortly after, and he was baptized, and his Christian name was King Joao. But he didn't remain a Christian. He converted, and then shortly after, he renounced Christianity. Now, he had a son who he had sent to govern a certain area. And for whatever reason, him and his son was having problems. The son took this as an exile. While the son's name is Nzinga Ayimbimba, later known as Alfonso I. While this son is in so-called exile, he becomes this devout Christian, okay? So as he's practicing Christianity and feeling like everything that he came from was wrong, his father dies. When he goes back to claim the throne. His brother, him and his brother are in competition for this throne. Now, the story is that when he goes back to fight his brother, the brother and his army see like, some type of saint and some chariots of fire or something in the sky. They get scared and they retreat. And this is how Alfonso gains the throne. Nonetheless, or needless to say, when he gets on the throne, he has everyone, he makes Christianity the religion of the country or the kingdom. And but really, to be honest, just the people in his court were really baptized and really practiced Christianity. People in the villages were still practicing their traditional spirituality. Moving along quickly to Queen Nzinga. Later on, Queen Nzinga, she actually was the ruler of two kingdoms called Ndogo and Matamba. Now these actually, they say she was a relative of these previous kings I just spoke of, and even at times an enemy. Now they group a lot of groups into the Kingdom of Congo, but they actually were broken up, so it was several kingdoms. But that whole area was like Congolese tribes. Okay, Queen Nzinga. There's so much to say about her. What I want to say, skipping to the end, is that she lived to be almost 80. And like in her last 6 or 7 years of life, she lived in peace, but she spent the majority of her life fighting colonizers, and she did it. And she prevented them from colonizing her area that she governed. But she was ruthless, like she had a lot. So throughout all this fighting, you know, the spirits of Congo, they're getting hotter. As the people work with different spirits, the spirits react and they work with you and what's going on at the time. So I'm imagining that, you know, the spirits are getting stronger, hotter in conjunction to what is going on in the land at the time. Now, Queen Nzinga, she was favored by her father. She was the daughter of a king. She had to fight her brother basically for the throne, but she didn't really get the throne that way. Her brother, and there's a couple of stories about her. Her brother was on the throne first. Her brother sends her to the Portuguese to create a peace treaty. During the peace treaty, the Portuguese, they don't offer her a chair. So they're all sitting on chairs. They roll a mat out for her to sit down on. So instead of her sitting down, she has one of her servants come over and get on all fours, and she sits on the young lady's back. when the negotiations are over, she stands up and she slits the woman's neck. And she turns around and says, "The Queen of Zanga never sits on the same chair twice." So she's known for this type of energy. She was known to have a harem of 60 men. And once she would sleep or have sex with a man, his life was taken. What other stories? She fought off a tribe of cannibals. And these are stories, so I have no validation of whether or not this happened or not. I like to always point out, none of us lived back during that time, but these are some of the things that I've read. She had the 60-man harem. And what was the other thing? Oh, some people say that she drank blood before every battle. Whatever she did, it worked. She fought these people off for years. And during the time, in the middle of all this stuff, she starts out, like I said, the brother starts on the throne, and then it's a bunch of family drama. The brother is killed. The nephew who's supposed to come after him is killed. They try to blame it on her, but one way or the other, she becomes the queen, and all this stuff happens as she moves through, and she, you know, she protects her home. So, you know, that's what is up with Miss Queen and Zanga. The Congolese have a reverence for the divine feminine. They are a matrilineal tribe or matrilineal tribes. And I point out that there's a reverence for the divine feminine because just talking to the elders that I have today, they will tell you that women are the keepers of the great waters. So everyone has water in their body, but they look at women, we in our womb, we hold the ocean. You know, we're the only ones that hold the great waters. And they also see us as the ones that are holding the survival of the people. So they do reverence women a lot. They reverence women so much that the maternal side of a family is they look at as a collective. So if you have, so the men on the mother's side are addressed as Yaya. Yaya is a term that's used for mother. So they reverence women so much that if you have like a, you know, your child is addressing your brother or your child is addressing a male on your father's side, they will call that male Yaya just to show how important the mother's side is. And they look at that as a collective. So your cousins on your mother's side are actually your brothers and your sisters. They don't see cousins on the mother's side. But on the father's side, they do. So even in marriage, it's frowned upon. You couldn't marry anybody on your mother's side. But they don't uphold it to be a regular practice. But if you were to marry a distant cousin on your father's side, it wouldn't be looked at as, you know, always a big thing. Because they don't even look at the father's side as much as in the same way as they do the mother's. The uncle, so your mother's brother would be the leader of your clan or your family. If your mother doesn't have a brother, some uncle in the family on the mother's side is the leader. So if you wanted to get married or if you wanted to do something, anything, that goes through the uncle. So the uncle is actually looked at as the leader. But it has to be the uncle on the mother's side. As a matriarchal tribe, it's a question mark there because technically matriarchal would mean that they were ruled by women. There are a few, generally their leaders are men, but there are a few leaders, a few female leaders. So I would put them as a matriarchal and a matrilineal tribe, matriarchal and matrilineal tribes. Even today there is Queen Diambi. She is the current queen. You could Google her. She's on Instagram and everything. She is the queen I can't remember the exact tribes that she's queen of, but it's not the whole Congo. There's certain tribes that she's queen of. And she recently was just in New Orleans in July, I believe, May or July. So yeah, I would actually put them under matriarchal as well. So moving along, Mbongi. This is an image from the movie The Black Panther. Mbongi is the learning circle. So for with this spirituality, a part of this spirituality is coming together. Community is very, very big. Community is big across Africa, period, in a lot of different areas of Africa from what I've gathered. But speaking for the Congolese, the Mbongi is the learning circle. It's where you will go. You have different types of Mbongi. So it's where you will go to learn whatever you need to learn, whether that's spiritual things, whether that's coming into manhood, womanhood, rites of passages, whatever, to also to resolve problems in the community. And right now, today, a lot of the temples that I went to or the areas when I went to the spiritual houses, they have a courtyard, and that's where they gather. So they gather there for the Mbongi, and it's literally set up kind of like a circle. So what I imagine is when I bring it to New Age, the Mbongi reminds me of sister circles, gathering for, like I said, rites of passages, different rituals, and even Misas. If there's anyone here that's been to a Misa, you will know what I'm talking about. Misas are spiritual meetings that they have in a lot of the Lukumi traditions. But yeah, so that's the Mbongi. I wanted to cover some elevated ancestors of the Congo. Make sure I stay along with my slides. Elevated ancestors. So I will go over some terms so you guys understand. There are some parallels you can create or you can see with the Yoruba pantheon, but so in the Yoruba pantheon, they call some of the elevated ancestors Orisha. At least that's a term that's used interchangeably with Irumile. But with the Congo, they have elevated ancestors as well. So they would be, they would be like Orisha, how I would see them. and some important ones that I picked out, one is Kimpavita and the other is Andre Masua. Kimpavita, this story is very touching to me, and it hits home in a sense where I just feel her. I feel her energy. Her Christian name, or she was baptized, and her name was given as Dona Beatrice. This was a young lady who was between 19 to 21 years old. So to me, she was a baby. People have given her the title, the Mother of African Revolution. She was born into upper class, so somewhere her line there was a king, because a name associated with her signifies that she had some type of role. She came from royalty. So this was not just a regular, she was significant in her community. She was initiated in Ganga, and she was also initiated into a secret society or secret societies. The type of the Ngangas vary, and I'll go over that as well. So they're different special, they have different specialties, just like doctors. So the type of Nganga that she was categorized under was, one term is Nganga Morinda, but I've heard and seen other terms for this type of Nganga. But you have the Ngangas that are the healers and the priests of people who are more like on an individual basis. And then you have Ngangas that they're working to heal the entire community as a whole. So that's the type of Nganga she was. This secret society that she was initiated into called Kempasi, it is significant because there's a lot of significance. I see a lot of this movie, Black Panther, just came up so much when I was creating this slide. I don't know why. Well, I know why, but it's crazy because it never came up to me that much before. But I saw a lot of little things in that movie that reminds me of these type of societies. But in this society, it was significant because part of their practice is self-sacrifice. And in that, there's this type of ritual, I guess you would say, that the person is tied up like to a wall or something, kind of like in the form of a cross, and they're left there until they pass out. And this is signifying a sacrifice that they're giving to heal and remedy problems that they may be experiencing in their community. So they don't die, they just leave them up there until they will pass out. So anyways, she was a part of this type of society. It reminds me, of course, of why the Congolese didn't really see a big difference with the whole Jesus story. It also reminds me of a story I heard about Marie Laveau. There's a story about Marie Laveau, and if anyone doesn't know, Marie Laveau is a significant voodoo priestess in the New Orleans area. The story is about her going to a Catholic church, and she is asked to get this man out of jail for some significant crime that he did. And so she goes into the Catholic church, and she spends hours sitting on her knees, holding extremely hot peppers in her mouth. And the reason why they say she's doing that is because she's doing it as an act of self-sacrifice, because the spirits recognize sacrifice in such a high level. And that's how she was able to get this man spiritually removed or released from jail. So anyway, you will see how a lot of the Congolese spiritual practices have been passed down and through enslavement, the different branches, how these branched out to where we are. And like I said, the story of Marie Laveau and so many other people who could possibly be linked to Congolese spirituality. I'm trying to get through this story with King Pavita fairly quickly, but it's so much. She falls sick or something happens to her. She's out for 3 days. They think she's dead. So modern day people are saying that she probably was in a coma. One way or the other, she comes back to life. They literally have her laid out on a mound, like they're, you know, thinking she's dead. And she wakes up, she comes back after 3 days. And when she comes back, she has all these messages from the ancestral realm. She's telling, because at this time, everybody's, you know, practicing Christianity, or at least somewhat meshing it into what they already practice. So she's proclaiming that all the saints they've been told about are black. Jesus is black. Everybody black. Everybody come from Africa. She begins to lead this revolution, and she gains thousands of followers at this time. And she's leading them to the Mbanza Congo, which is the capital of the Kingdom of Congo, to reclaim Congo from the French. Of course, the French get wind of this, and they put her on trial, and they burn this woman, this baby, 19 to 21 years old. They burn her alive with her baby. Now, the baby is significant because before she gets where she's going, before she gets executed, she starts telling them she's going to go back to the ancestors. She's going to ascend. Now, some say that she had been married in her youth, younger, she was already a youth, but she was married before, but she couldn't stay married because she was so deeply involved in her spirituality. But so at this point, she's not married anymore. So some people are saying that she gets pregnant and she's telling these people this because she needs to leave to have her baby. One way or the other, she's telling them she's going to ascend and leave and go back to the land of the ancestors. But she has this baby before she gets executed, and they burn this woman, this young woman, and her baby and her mate alive. 33 years after her death is the Stono Rebellion, and 83 to 85 years after that is the Haitian Revolution. A lot of people link these rebellions and revolutions to her because they say a lot of her followers were enslaved and brought to the new lands, and it's said that in both cases they were chanting Conga, and Conga can be loosely translated to salvation. I mean, this is something that she used to chant. Also, in the Haitian Revolution, there is a significant military figure named Makaya, who was definitely from the Kingdom of Congo. He actually proclaimed that. So anyway, they're linking all these people back to her. Andre Matsua, both Kimberly Quick, he is actually, you know, I'm looking at them as all regular people. Regular man, this is more modern. He really was just a simple guy who wanted to start a self-improvement group. He starts this self-improvement group, and the group turns into something political. All he really does is raise some money to buy back the land of the Congolese people from the colonizers. And in doing so, they imprison him for saying that he's swindling money. He gains thousands of followers as well. He ends up getting beaten and dies in prison. But these are some of the ancestors that in Congolese spiritual houses now, they venerate very highly. They keep them in their prayers. And so, again, that's to me why I consider them to be what we would call in the Yoruba pantheon as Orisha. Because they have been venerating them for a long time. Before I go on to the next slide, or I can click on the next slide even. So throughout all this fighting, wars, revolution, colonizing, the Congolese are embracing Christianity somewhat. They just see it as something that they've already been practicing from the cross. The cross to them is connected to trees. Trees are connected to trees are like a cross. So, you know, the top part of the tree and the bottom part of the tree, one part is connected to the spiritual realm to them. The other part is to the physical realm. So the cross is something that they already believe in. Dying on the cross. I just told you about the secret society called Kimpasi. That's something they already was doing. Water baptism, they connect to Simbi spirits, a group of spirits they call Simbi, water spirits. Salt and baptism, the Congolese still to this day look at salt as a way to disperse negative evil spirits and witchcraft. So, you know, and the funny thing about it is I was tickled by this because a lot of times they will get not initiated, they will get baptized so they can get the title Don or Don. And they also thought getting baptized would help keep them from getting enslaved or keep them from slave traders. So these are some just common things that the people in the villages would, you know, take in Christianity, but they were still practicing their traditional beliefs. And really it was more prominent amongst the king's people more than it was in the village. Okay. Branches of Congo spirituality. So after so many of us were enslaved, we get spread across all these different places. I pointed out five significant ones. These are the ones I know of. Hoodoo in the south, particularly the low country of the southern United States. You got Savannah, Georgia. You got Charleston, South Carolina. These two cities alone had about 65% when slavery is documented as first starting, about 65% of those enslaved people were from some part of the Kingdom of Congo. And then it dwindled down to about 40%, but that's still a lot. And that's not even considering there's a high percentage of enslaved people that they don't know where they were from. But the ones that they do know or they did document, most of them in the low country actually came from Congo. But all across the South, you have the Congo, you have various different people from different traditions, and you have Hoodoo that starts. And Hoodoo, I'll give a little more definition on Hoodoo in the next slide. So also to Cuba, you have Palo Mayombe that starts. Palo Mayombe is a Congolese Afro-Cuban Congolese spiritual tradition. In Cuba as well, one third to one half of the enslaved people were said to be Congo as well. In Brazil, you have Kimbanda or Umbanda. You have Candomblé in Brazil, which is more connected to the Orisha, Ifá Orisha tradition or religion. And then you have Kimbanda, which is like Palo. In Haitian Voodoo, you had a significant amount of Congolese people enslaved and sent to Haiti. So in Haitian Voodoo, even now, there is a significant sector of spirits that they work with, and they will, and a Mambo or Hougan will tell you that these are Congo spirits. So they have a significant group that they work with that are Congo. And now modern day countries of the Congo are practicing what we call Ngunza. And Ngunza is it's traditional Congolese spirituality, but it's a little twist to it. They still have a little bit of churchiness to it, but you know, it depends on what house you're a part of. But for the most part, it is traditional Congolese spiritual practices in modern day Congo countries. All right. I wanted to go over what Ndoki is and how the Congolese view the other world. Ndoki is loosely translated to, you know, in Western terms as witchcraft. But the Congolese don't view witchcraft the way Westerners view witchcraft, just like a lot of Africans don't view witchcraft the same way that we view over here. Ndoki or witchcraft can be good or bad. It just depends. So anyone who has any type of extraordinary, significant power or influence over people can have Ndoki. So basically like Beyonce or somebody could be considered to have Ndoki because of the power and influence that they have to do good things. And they don't look at witchcraft per se to be, you have good and you have evil, but the goal is not like in Christianity to eradicate sin and get rid of all the evil witches or whatnot. They look at things more in the aspect of harmony. So just like you have good and bad witchcraft, you have good and bad within you. You have, everyone has a twin. Good and bad are considered twins that we have within all of us. So they look at it as bringing harmony. You don't let one, you don't let the evil or the bad get out of control. And that's how they look at it in, as far as Ndoki in the is common day sense of the term. It's something that you shouldn't let get out of control. But it's not, we're going to get rid of all the sin and banish this. And it's just a part of life. It's just a part of the community. So that's a quick explanation of how they view Ndoki and spiritual power. So that's just, Ndoki is just spiritual power. And the other world, or spiritual realm, the world of the ancestors, is very much connected to our everyday life for Congolese. Everything is intertwined, you know, and that's across the board in Africa and different areas of Africa. But for Congolese, everything is intertwined with the ancestors. The ancestors are very much a part of the community. You have a responsibility, especially if you are a priest or priestess to the ancestors. As an Nganga, we all are, I would consider to be spokespersons for our own ancestors, but the Ngangas are looked at as the mouthpiece. The ones you go to connect to them more. So there is some significant things about this different with the spiritual realm that they believe in. And I'm just gonna bring one to the source of topic because there's so much. But one thing that's interesting is that they look at the spiritual realm as our opposite. So our daytime right now, the spirits are sleeping. Nighttime is their daytime. Our daytime is their nighttime. So it's different things like that's interesting. Like if you're going to pick herbs for spiritual reasons, it's best to do it at night because the herbs are woke. They're woke. So that's how, you know, that's some differences in the way that Congo look at the spiritual realm. But it's very much intertwined with our everyday life. Congo spiritual terms. Palo spiritual greeting, the Palo spiritual greeting is Salam Aleikum. I'll go back to that. Salam Aleikum is how we greet each other with a handshake. We have the Most High God, which is Zambia Mpungu, which is crazy because Hollywood took that and created the term zombie. N-Z-O, or without the N, Z-O-M-B-I-E, but Zambie Mpungu. Zambie means high God, almighty God, most high God. Mpungu is like primordial energies. So for comparison reasons, for people who are familiar with the Orisha Pantheon, it would be similar to the Irumale. Infumbe are the spirits of the dead that are really connected to our Apollo vessels. Inkisi is any type of contained spirit. Nganga is a spiritual healer, priest, is also the term used for the actual vessel of the spirits in Palo, and in traditional practices. And there's different types of Ngangas, like I said. Father and mother is Tata and Yaya. For ancestors, you can use the term ancestors is Bakulu or Bakula, but you can also say Nkaka. They say that often, I hear, in the Congo now amongst my elders. So Nkaka actually translates to grandparents, but they use that in terms of referencing the ancestors as well. Palo, this Palo greeting is interesting because it sounds like a Muslim greeting. And the quick story behind that is that Congolese people, like I said, they were warriors, did a lot of fighting. When they would conquer an enemy, they are known, and this is validated because I've spoken with some of my people in my own tribe. So this is in books, but this is validated that they actually had cannibalism. So sometimes they would eat their enemies and devour them. It was seen as them devouring their power. And they would put them in these vessels. And so at times, if they devoured a Muslim enemy, when this particular branch of traditional Congolese spirituality, let's just say it's a darker side. So they would also enslave their enemies. So not only were you conquered in life, but after death, you were enslaved. The spirit of that enemy was enslaved. So when they would go to the spirit of their enemy to have them do whatever, they would greet them in the ways that spirit remembers to be greeted in physical life. And it would be for a Muslim enemy, they started greeting them, Salaam Alaikum, because that's how they heard them greeting each other. And that became a thing. And in Palo, we kept that. Congo divination techniques. All right. Nkandi is the palm nuts. It's kind of like the Iking technique in Ifa. Nkakala, kauri shells, kauri, sea, snail shells is a divination technique as well. In Palo, they call it Batiti Nkobo. These two are not very commonly used. You have to really search for somebody to find them using that. So I'm doing research more to study more of that technique in Congo. The more common techniques that they use now are the coconut shells in Palo. They use a divination technique called the Titi Mensu, which is the use of an impaka. An impaka is a horn with sacred items packed in it with a mirror at the end of it so you can see into the spiritual realm. Another term is Balumbu, which is kind of like a bone basket reading. They call the basket Mboko. But the most common way that I have experienced Congolese spiritual priests and leaders reading is through mediumship. It's set up like a Misa in a sense. It's very similar to that. But they have their own style, of course. But when you go to get a reading, you go in the courtyard, you sit in the courtyard with the Nganga, and he reads you straight like that. No tools, no nothing. You know, they just read you straight from spirit. They might put some stuff down for the ancestors, and then they just go. And that's how they commonly read. Okay. I'm getting close to time. I got 15 minutes. All right, so nation sacks, mojo bags, bottle spells, all a part of hoodoo. Hoodoo is a conjure, folklore magic that started in started in the antebellum South. It is a combination of practices from Africa, Native American aspects of it, and some say European, a little melting pot, a little mixture of stuff. But some people said it was an initiatory tradition as well. Some people say not. But either way it goes, I just wanted to go over really quickly some of the things that you can compare to Congo spiritual work. This is actually a picture of some of my hoodoo stuff. I don't do hoodoo back too much, but back in the day I found an old picture. So this is some mojo bags that I had created. And this is so long ago that it really is ineffective at this point, but I wanted to put it up for a picture. So the Congo believe a lot in container spells and container spiritual work. So I recognize that in different things in hoodoo. So your mojo bags are the bags, and the, they also are termed as greedy bags in New Orleans, or nation sacks in places like Mississippi and Alabama. Those can actually be compared to the Nkisi. You have, and also I want to point out that hoodoo was, can be looked at as a way of rituals of resistance. It's something that they also, they did because they brought it from Africa. They also, it got strong because that was their way of kind of gaining control over the situation when they were enslaved, you know, and gaining some form of control over the people that was enslaving them. So anyways, things like goofer dust. Goofer dust is used in hoodoo. Comes from, you get the dust or dirt from a grave. There's a Congolese term that this is connected to. It's called Kufwa. And Kufwa means dead person in Kikongo. You have medicine bottles that they would find at enslaved people's graves. These medicine bottles were to bring the medicine and let the medicine go down through the graves and empower the person that was dead, kind of, to bring them back or give them empower in the ancestral realm. It's done in the Congo. Broken ornaments and gourds over the graves. Witch bottles found in hoodoo. Very common. If you guys remember the Ray Charles movie, one of the, it's been so long, it's been not so long, but one of the opening scenes is a tree with a lot of different color bottles all over. The people who practiced hoodoo back then would put bottles on the trees or in front of their homes, and these were witch bottles. Or walking boys. Walking boys, witch bottles is just, you know, self-explanatory. It was to catch a witch if a witch was coming to haunt you at night or ride you or whatnot. This is what they thought. And walking boys are like these colorful bottles. They would put the conjure man or root doctor would put like something like a lizard or something in there, put a lot of colorful stuff in it, and the bottle would move. So they called them walking boys. They found these things in the Congo as well. And it's interesting because actually as the slaves and the enslaved people developed different hoodoo techniques and things in the newer world, quote, new world, these things were developing in Congo as well. So they found very similar bottles, and they would have raffia in there, different colors, different things in them, and using them in the same exact way. Okay. Palo Prenda. This moved kind of slow, so if you caught that, you was able to see something. I tried to cover it up, but this is an actual picture of my padrino's Ngangas. I covered up some of the secrets, but Ngangas are big. They do contain, well, not all of them are big, it depends, but they're iron cauldrons that contain sacred items. Again, Palo Mayombe came from the Congolese, and how they began to, they branched off this whole new tradition in Cuba. They do contain human bones. The thing that got a little twisted with Palo is that in Palo, they started going to extract bones from people who were off, basically. Insane people, or people who just didn't care, from the graves. But initially in Congo, this was only for your direct ancestors' bones. You have, and these are called Ngangas. The Nganga is an actual microcosmic universe. So in Palo got to be real, like, badass because the Ngangas of Palo, they see this Nganga and they see their work as them being the king of their world. You know, it's their world. And one thing I will vouch for with Palo Mayombe is one of the most extremely fastest, quickest forms of work and magic that I've ever been a part of, it works almost immediately. There's not, it's not 100%. Nothing is 100%. But if you have a Palero that is really adamant about seeing his work go through, it's going to happen. Whatever you're trying to do on top of this Nganga, it's going to happen. So the effectiveness is of it is very effective. It's very fast. But it's not, you know, you have houses of Palo that are good, considered categorized as good or light, bad or dark. And then you have some that are categorized as both. I was a part of a house that would fit in the both category. In Palo, we have Firmas. Firmas are spiritual signatures that we use to call down the spirits, which is similar to Bebes and Voodoo. And it does come from the Congo. Graphic writing is very much still used in today in Congo. The initiation for Palo is... levels, and part of that initiation, you do get marked. Most Poleros, you wouldn't see their marks. Ngunza is the modern day traditional Congolese spiritual practice that I'm a part of now. I am still a Polero, but I practice and I work differently now with my Congolese work. And I'm a part of a modern day spiritual house in the Congo. And these are some Nkisi. This is actually from African Art Museum in Savannah. These are real Nkisi. I was surprised to see this in the museum when I went, and I've seen that they actually have a museum in the Congo that has a lot of Nkisi as well. But when I saw this in Savannah, I was like, whoa. And these are the smaller ones. They have some that almost are like life size. These are very powerful spirits, literally. So with every nail you see here, the Nganga has... use an incantation to hammer it into this item. In the center of this one, it's in the middle. This is where a lot of the sacred items would be packed, and a mirror would be put on the end of it so they can see into it, and they can pretty much give life to this, to the item, to the Nkisi here. And in Ngunza, we wear white and red more often. White is worn to connect to the spiritual realm. If you want to connect to the spiritual realm in Ngunza, you wear white, or the high priest wear red, all red. And that is pretty much, oh, I have one little slide I had to add in. I was adding slides all the way up until this morning. So this is a picture of a Congolese woman. And like I said, in Palo, you do get scratched in any traditional Congolese spiritual practices. You do get marked. This is I believe a woman of a Luba tribe. I think it's but this is done in different tribes throughout Africa, not just in the Congolese. But it's just interesting to me because I thought this picture was very interesting of her back. And the guy here, the nice, sexy, handsome guy who played in the Black Panther, he has all these marks on him. So that connects me to my Congolese spiritual practices. And so I wanted to leave some thoughts with you all. I call this bridging the gap because I feel like I see what the ancestors are doing. I want you all to ask yourselves, what do you think the ancestors are doing now when you have this new, I call it a new wave of spirituality. And what is the importance of Congolese spirituality to you? I don't like trends, so if you follow me on Instagram or if you know anything about me, I'll put that a lot. Like, spirituality is not a trend, but, you know, someone enlightened me and was like, all religion started out as a trend, so I take that. But there's so much that's going on right now. I just point out to people that spirituality is more than just a trend, and that I feel like the ancestors are repositioning their seats of power. So I just wanted to put some of these thoughts in your head before I close out and share a little bit about my services and products. I have my information here, my website's here down the lower end, my phone number, my social media pages. I have certain movies that I love. Like I said, I really wasn't a Black Panther fan. This came about as I was putting this slide together for this presentation, but this is from the movie The Skeleton Key. I love that movie. So some of my services, I have some of my readings and consultations here. I do bone basket readings. I do all types of readings. I do determine if people are supposed to be initiated in Palo or in Gunza. I do birth and death readings. I do EME readings. I have some of my students online here, or my goddaughters. No, I have one, I think, and I have one close friend online, but I have a set of goddaughters who are twins. In Yoruba, they call them Ibeji. So I have one of my Ibejis online, and we have a various array of spiritual products. I have my spiritual app, tell you guys about that. I will be doing an annual Congolese Ancestor Festival every year. I started this year, was my first year in Savannah. I plan to continue to do this every year. And then I have my, my Congo work that I've been focusing on now, amongst other work that I do. For specifically for Congo, I do make Nkisi for people of various types of Nkisi. All this stuff has to be approved by my spirits. I do personal ancestor appeasement because I found, even for myself, that the Congo, every set of ancestors, that they're depending on their culture, they want stuff done their way. I mean, you can get something done, like I could get stuff of my Congo ancestors done in the folk Yoruba way, but I still had to go back and revisit it with some Congolese flavor. So if you find, or you know you have Congo ancestors, or you just don't know what you got and you need to find out about your ancestors and get some form of spiritual work to balance them out, I do that. Ngunza initiation is coming soon. I'm a part of Ngunza House. We are forming the things that we need to, quote, bridge the gap and help people who need work done, get it done in the Congo, and I plan to accompany people who need work done in the Congo and work that out. This is my app. If you haven't downloaded it already, it's pretty cool, I must say myself. Like it says here, you take a picture of yourself or you download a picture of whoever, and it will scan it and give you the energies, quote, energies around the picture, all around you, and it gives you a remedy as well. And what else does it do? It's free, except there's a $1.99 charge if you want to know a little bit more. For whatever reason, I don't know why people act like it's so hard to spend $1.99, but it is there if you want to know more. You can spend the $1.99 to get more information, but it's a pretty cool app. I think it's very cool and it's pretty accurate, but for legal purposes, I have to say it's for entertainment, but it seems to be pretty accurate. My spirits did that with this. And these are some references, some books that I use, and we'll go back to that, but I want to get to y'all questions because I don't want to take up too much time. I'm right at 4:30 and we started 10 minutes late. This is another picture of one of my favorite movies, Angel Heart. I love Lisa Bonet and the acting that she did in this movie. So I'm done, y'all. It's a lot. Please tell me you have questions, because I know I said a lot.
That was extraordinary, Iya. Thank you.
Let me pause this music. Hold on one second. Okay.
Iya, can you hear me? Iya.
Oh, hold on. I can't hear because it's still there. Hold on. Let me go pause share or stop share. Where did that music go? Hold on, guys. I can't even stop this music. Hold on. Whatever reason, I can't even find the thing. Oh, okay. I gotta close that up. All right. Now I can hear.
All right. Iya, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay, fantastic. So if you have a question, would you type yes in the chat? And I will just call you by name. And I'm saying question, reflection, comment. So we're going to begin with Asada.
Myself. Can everyone hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, perfect. So I wrote down my question. Yeah, there it is. Okay, so the picture that you showed of pretty much powerful pieces put up in museum. Mm-hmm. What can we modern society do about that? Because even before I accepted spirit, when I would go into museums and I would come across some of those things, there was some energy there. And at that time, I just didn't acknowledge it. I was just like, ooh, this feels funny. And I would just walk away faster. Mm-hmm. Whether it is from Africa or different parts of the world, what can we modern people do so that those pieces are not just put on display, because obviously they were used for powerful things? Mm-hmm. What can we do about it?
That's something that I think that is difficult, because for the, let's just take this Savannah Art, African Art Museum. That particular museum is privately owned. The person who has all that stuff on display is supposed to be his stuff, and he's an anonymous person. We don't know who it is. And all this stuff that he just, oddly enough, I mean, I'm talking about three floors of African spiritual items that he gathered. And so he has the right to put this on display. He's not even charging you to go in the museum. The museum is free. So it's a little difficult when people gather these items and they put them out. It's almost like when I look on Google and I see people have placed their ngongas or even, you know, official items were on display for everybody to see. And to me, that's sacred. So the only thing I can say is, you know, I feel like the ancestors, they know what they're doing. They're working. They're working through groups like this so that we can bring things back to center and keep things more sacred, spread the information that it needs to be kept sacred. Because sometimes people, they don't know better. But in many cases, they know better, you know. But it's nothing that you can do when someone is sharing their own private information or their own private items. That's my opinion.
Okay. Go ahead, continue.
I was just gonna say, do you have any suggestions?
Me personally, no.
I do believe that the ancestors are working on things like that.
Okay.
Sure.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Betty.
Queen, I hear a lot of static. I don't know what that is. Okay.
Alafia.
Yes.
Alafia. Yes. Yeah, I just have a comment as you were talking about the Polynesian and something about a gazelle.
Oh.
And the water. And the song that came to mind was Tina Marie's song, Deja Vu.
Uh-huh.
Yes. And you talked about how there's a really beautiful place where people can go and, I guess, be in a harmony with each other. You know, things are just...
Right.
But anyway, it was just that song came to mind as you were describing the environment and the culture. And the gazelle, I'm like, that's deja vu. I think Tim Marie is Polynesian, right?
I don't know, but I'm gonna go back and listen to that song because that's how I felt. I felt like it was deja vu. I really was thrown back at the visions that I was having.
Yes, okay. Well, I'm at a point in my life, I'm trying to connect the dots, you know, to make sense of the whole scope of things. Mm-hmm. So I will be contacting you, okay, for guidance.
Definitely. That's great.
Yes, yes. Okay. That's my comment.
Thank you. And I apologize for y'all if I went real, real fast, but I knew I had a lot of information and I wanted to make sure I kind of got it in. So I hope y'all was able to get, you know, it's probably going to take some time to massage it if you have questions. even after this, I'm available.
Or to let it marinate, you know?
Yeah, and marinate.
Yes, okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay.
Annie Maria.
Greetings.
My fellow Savannah person.
Hey, girl.
Hey.
Well, I'm not originally from Savannah. I'm from Macon, Georgia. I was raised in Atlanta. Then I went to Savannah State, all of that.
Okay.
I've been in Savannah for the last about 8 years.
Okay.
So I wanted to ask you, because I work with a lot of sisters in Savannah who aren't from Savannah.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this particular energy there where it's like people are being pulled to Savannah.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to know, did you have any like resources or references, or what's your idea on why so many people are feeling called to that particular city?
Mm-hmm.
What can we do to, I guess, elevate the energy there?
Mm-hmm.
If you know what I mean by it's a very
mm-hmm.
energy in Savannah. And I feel like all these healers or empaths are being pulled to this region for a reason. So I just wanted your feedback on that.
Okay. I agree with you. And I did, when I did the Congo Ancestor Festival in June, I think it was, that was one of the things I wanted to do, is use that festival to help elevate the energy in Savannah. And if other people don't realize what you're saying, I know exactly what you're talking about. And I feel like it's a common thing in slave port cities, because it's the same feeling I feel when I go to New Orleans and places like that. It's like a heaviness on the city, and cities carry energy just like people carry energy. So there needs to be a certain amount of work done to raise the vibration in these type of cities, or just cities, period. So I started this year with doing the Ancestor Festival. You mentioned why I feel people are called to, or being pulled to Savannah regions and places like that. I think it's the ancestors, just like when I responded to the first young lady, they are working actively. So you have people being called to places like Savannah, pulled to places like Savannah. And when they get there, they like, Savannah is old. If you haven't been to Savannah, it's like an old feeling. The trees are old. It's like, it's a story there. And so you feel the vibration.
Yeah.
But not only are they being called to places like Savannah, I feel they're being called to cities like that because of the slave port. It's a slave port. And the enslaved people's energy is still very strong there, and the ancestors are pulling us. Mm-hmm. But not only are they pulling us to cities like that, they're also pulling us back home to Africa. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would never have imagined within 3 years I've been to Africa 3 times. And the first time I went to Africa was my very first time out of the country. Mm-hmm. When I tell you I'm a down-home Southern, down-to-earth South Savannah girl, I literally am. So I've never even been out of the country until I went to Africa. So the ancestors, that's the way that they're working. It may seem subtle, but when you are awakened and you can see, this is how they're working. They're like, okay, all right, if the people that's in these cities or the people that's in Africa, they're not doing what they need to do, we're gonna bring some of y'all back.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's my feedback. I feel like the ancestors are pulling us there for work that needs to be done. I feel like we should. One thing I admired about the people when I was in Africa is their sense of unity and community. Mm-hmm. If they didn't have nothing else, their sense of community was something that stuck with me. I'm talking about during initiations, it would be like 6 families coming together, everybody just working together. I do feel we need more of that. So, my own city, I invite people, let's get together, let's do stuff. Wherever I'm at, let's try to form community more. And I'm trying to sum it up shortly, but before I got initiated to Oshun, I was one of them women that be like, oh, you know, I don't mess with women like that because I just deal with the guys. Women messy, women this, women that. And Oshun was like, no, ma'am. No, ma'am. You're going to be working with women. You're going to be doing this and doing that. So throughout my journey, different initiations showed me how important things like community and coming together, working with women, you know, doing what we need to do to make things, you know, elevate.
Right.
So why just saying we need to get together more? People call for, because the ancestors are working. And the energy in those cities are there because there's a heaviness from the lack of veneration to the people that came to those cities.
Okay. Thank you, sis. Yeah, because I sometimes feel like, why am I still in Savannah, you know? And I just appreciate your perspective. And I'm definitely going to link up with you and let everybody know what you're doing in Savannah. We can support with your festival and everything that you're doing.
Yes, thank you. I would be so excited. If we do have a quick time, I want to share some clips from that festival, but we'll see how many questions we have. Or even at that, you guys can call me or text me and whatnot, and I can send you the videos if we don't have time to go over it here.
Thank you.
But yeah, I'm trying to do it again for sure, 2020. I haven't set the month yet. June is hot in Savannah. But June is the anniversary of my Apollo initiation. So I, you know, try to do things based on dates in my spiritual journey. So I'm thinking it's probably going to be May or June.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm there.
All right. Thank you. And we definitely got to link up.
Okay.
Nakia.
Hello. I know my camera's not working. Can you hear my voice, though?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, awesome. I'm so excited to have received all this information I wasn't expecting, but believe I called into my experience. I did my ancestry, and things switched up a lot, and this is a lot about the Congo. Cameroon, Congo came up. My first question was particularly, you said red, the high priestess wears red. I was wondering, you mentioned the white opens you to the spiritual realm. What's the red?
The red is just, well, and in Ngunza they say, you know, white or red will connect you. Wearing those colors, the vibration from those colors, connects you stronger to the spiritual realm. But particularly, they distinguish the high priest or high priestess with the color red. So in a spiritual house, you would have most of the other people wearing white, and the people who have initiated to the higher levels are the ones that's wearing red.
Okay, and just one more thing. I actually just got back from, I missed a couple of classes because I was in Ghana, because I felt a tremendous call, like breaking down like a five-year-old, I must go this year. And my husband, who wasn't necessarily on that wavelength, just went with me. We were there for 9 days and it was amazing. I'm very, I feel very new to the process of connecting with African spirituality. I feel like I was steered away from it, but kept finding myself toward it because I grew up very Christian spaces. And I guess my question is, as a like super newbie, like I'm still like learning about so many different things, and it's so much information that I'm confused as to how to narrow it down and just start somewhere and dig in deep in practice. I've heard of hoodoo and I'm starting to learn what that is. And, you know, I had the stereotypes about voodoo before I started to learn more about that. And I'm seeing, I saw so many links in Africa, like you said, the unity and the community. I saw so many links from what we do here and what I just kind of took for granted as being a Black person in America that directly links us home. So what would you suggest for someone in my position? I feel like I'm starting in my life and I want to impart these things to my children, but it just seems like such a huge amount of explore.
For a person that's really fresh, new, I would definitely definitely advise, don't feel rushed. I tell people, students, do not feel like this is a competition. Everybody's journey is different, and you have to process things at your own time and in your own way. You have your own set of spirits. So, you know, and then I pointed on one of the slides, like, spirituality is not a trend. Everybody's like, oh, yeah, I'm Oshun, I'm this, and I'm that, and African, da, 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 da. And I think that it puts a lot of pressure on people, making people think like, oh, man, maybe I'm slow, or maybe I'm this. That's not the case. Take your time. Allow spirit. The whole idea of connecting to spirit is so you feel it. To me, like you said, growing up Christian, like a lot of African-American people, that's a religion. To me, I don't look at anything that I have been initiated into or any tradition that I practice. I don't look at it as religion. I look at it as spirituality because it's my connection to God. It's my journey. It's how, you know, how my spirits process things. And in the only way to do that is to allow the process to unravel, and, you know, allow yourself to open up like a flower. So take your time. Don't feel rushed. I don't care who's doing what, whatever. You know, spirit will, they know how, your ancestors, spirit knows how to connect you and tell you when it's time to move.
Okay.
When it's time to do something, whether that comes from you, you know, them connecting to you in your dreams, or if that comes from something like a class like this, or I don't want to call it a class, you know, an experience. Whether that comes from an experience where you feel moved. And I like to use that word because you have to feel moved. You got to feel it, you know? So if you feel moved from this and you want to learn a little bit more about hoodoo, or you want to learn a little bit more about whatever comes to your spirit, that's your sign.
Okay.
That's your sign. So take your steps on your journey like that.
Okay. I will. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Next we have Ifa Shewa and Ifa Doyin.
Hey, Ia.
Because
I see that Miss Harriet wanted a question, and I would rather Miss Harriet have a question because I connected to you 24/7, basically. I just wanted to say I am so proud of you. I love you. This class was, I mean, the lecture was awesome. I learned a couple of things. So I really appreciate you, and thank you, and I love you. Oh, and for some people that are new to the spiritual journey, what are some effective ways that we can give thanks to our ancestors on a regular basis?
Good question, my little baby. But first of all, I gotta tell y'all, like I said, I like to keep things real. The Ibeji or something else. This is just one of them. So, you know, she has a sister, Ifa, what's her name? Ifa.
Ifa Doyin.
Yes, she's not here right now, but my Ibeji are something funny. They are like those commercials that you guys see, or the what do you call it, the Sour Patch Kids? But yeah, so this is my Ibeji goddaughter. Your question about some steps for people who want to connect to their ancestors. Important is to make sure you have some form of guidance, like a spiritual mentor, someone that you trust, that you can connect to and ask questions. Don't just throw up an ancestor altar because people doing it. When you set up your sacred space, one thing is that, that's another thing that's important is that we all can connect to our ancestors. So if anyone doesn't know that, if you don't have to be initiated to connect to your ancestors. But, you know, with that said, if you decide you want to put up some type of sacred space, altar, or whatnot for your ancestors, I advise there's different ways you could do it. There's a general basic style of setting it up, and I could talk to people afterwards to give them some setup advice. But to me, the most important thing is to know that when you're setting this up, you're setting up a portal. You're setting up a doorway for them to come through. And you want to invite that energy into your home in a way where you know that you have other guidance, mentors that you can go to in case some don't feel right or you have questions. So, you know, make sure you have somebody that you can, that you look up to, and that is an experienced practitioner that can guide you on communicating with your ancestors and connecting with them. I think that, did that answer your question, Ifa Shewa?
Yes, Ia, thank you.
You're welcome.
Lene.
Hi, greetings everybody. Can y'all hear me?
Greetings. Yes, hi. I hear you.
My question is, I was very intrigued by everything that you shared, so thank you for that. And
you're welcome.
One of my notes that I've heard a few times, and I'm still trying to wrap my head around the concepts of where here in the earth realm is daytime, for example, and then in the spiritual realm is nighttime. Are there any other big differences like that that is important to keep in mind as we're working with these energies that you recommend?
It depends. You have to remember that different cultures and people believe differently. Because, for instance, my Baba and Ifa, he say the Yoruba, you know, they actually say the opposite. It's like, oh, you don't pick the herbs and do things at nighttime because the herbs are asleep. But in Congo, it's the other way, you know, that's when they're woke and we're asleep, or, you know, vice versa. So it depends on what culture and what tradition that you're practicing. For me, because I'm initiated to different sectors with different cultures and different types of people, the one that I embrace as far as my core is the one that my ancestors are. So most of my ancestors are Congo. And with that, I do practice the normal Ifa Orisha traditional ways of practicing for the most part. But when my spirit moves me to do something, my ancestors are moving me to do something, I generally will follow that route. So if I want to do spiritual work at nighttime because I feel like my spirit is more open at that time, to me, that's just, you know, because my culture, your ancestors, they live in you. You are them, you know. So if that's the dominant energy within you, and their belief system says that this is what it is, that's probably how you're going to feel. I follow that. Other things that are significant, like I said about the salt. The salt is interesting because one cool, intriguing story I heard about salt is that they would use salt to disperse evil spirits or witches, because they literally said that the evil spirit or bad witches get trapped in the salt because they have to count every grain of salt. I thought that was crazy. I thought that was interesting, but that's why, you know, that's one of the reasons why they say they use salt. But overall, if you know how salt is, if you know the scientific information behind salt, it does something. It disperses, you know, it extracts, I guess. So that's how I'm looking at it. But so salt and the different times of day. I'm trying to think of some other. It's so many little different experiences. But think of right now.
Yeah, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
There was a comment from Ty. Ty, did you want to speak?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, you can't hear me.
Hi.
Hi. Oh, man, I just was just saying how this, I didn't even know what to expect taking this class. I was just like, you know what? My girl is doing a class, a lecture, so I'm going to support, and I'm blown away. Which I took a lot of notes, and I'll go over them. I don't really have any questions, just kudos. And you know what? I'm ready for your next lecture. So, I don't know when the next lecture is. so I can get on there. I learned so much today, and I'm just thankful.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad you joined.
We have Harriet next. Harriet, we don't hear you. Let me unmute you or unmute yourself, please.
Okay, there. A couple of things. Thank you for a magnificent adventure and experience. I was in Savannah last December, and there's deep history there. I did a tour with a Dr. Touré who just told us, look, we're all Geechee. Mm-hmm. So, but it's a beautiful, fascinating city. And, you know, we spent time, well, we did ritual where the Haitian statues are to honor those Haitians who fought on our behalf, and spent some time on the waterway where the slave dungeons, if you will, are. So a lot of deep feeling there. So you're blessed to be in that place. In July, I went to Egypt for the first time. So,
wow.
Well, so I've lived in West and East Africa during the 80s, but that was my first trip to Egypt. And so the map that you showed where there were two different concepts about where the people, one was that, you know, came from Kemet to the area of the Congo. Of course, I'm choosing to believe that version.
Right.
And, you know, on this Elegant Elder series, we did hear from a sister who's steeped in Kemet wisdom, I would say. So I don't really have a question. I just wanted to comment. You talked about how it felt when you first came to the Congo, to Brazzaville, the river.
Yes.
The mind-blowing beauty. And I can recall my first time in West Africa, and I felt the power and welcoming of the ancestors. So I knew I belonged. And when I went to Egypt this time, you know, I felt like I was home.
Mm-hmm.
Felt, you know, welcome home, sister.
Mm-hmm.
So if I've not visited the continent, please go. Please go. Please go. That's all. Thank you for the adventure. Really.
You're welcome. And I thank you. That's actually, Egypt is the next place that I want to go. So I want to visit Egypt, but it's interesting because where I was in Brazzaville, like I said, it's 4 hours from Pointe Noire. And so I went, you know, the Congo River is in between what they call twin cities. So you got Brazzaville on one side and you have Kinshasa on the other side. Mm-hmm. And the river, me being at the river, I was, you know, going like, oh yeah, I'm gonna feel Oshun. You know, like I've been in Nigeria, in Oshobo, and Oshun's River, you know. I went out there starting to call on Oshun. And yes, Oshun is there. But the energy I felt was all like ancient Kemetic energy. And I'm not even, I guess I would say, you know, that's not my specialty. I'm still learning a lot about that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So when I started feeling that energy and I started seeing these visions, I was like, wow, my ancestors started talking to me. But two stories I want to say really, really quickly. When I stepped into that river, in the Congo River, I felt purified. I felt clean. Like it was something like spiritually, I felt everything washed away. And it's a rushing river. It looks like an ocean. I've been to the Mississippi River, of course, Savannah River, Oshun River. That river was different. And the energy from those waters was different. And when I went to Pointe Noire, I go there again. I'm the only spiritual person amongst the group. A lot of these people are just regular people, not really. I'm not the only one doing weird stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I go to on the beach and I walk towards the water. And I'm like, okay, I'm gonna pick up some things quick and say a quick prayer. Again, I have an elder who is she's an Oshun priestess, Ifa priestess, but she's also an active Amaganzi of the Mamiwata Society.
Mm-hmm.
When I got to the ocean, I saw I promise. Anybody that I talked to, I saw Mommy Water come up out that ocean.
I believe it.
Come up out the ocean, and it was an amazing experience. Again, so all these different energies, and then my counterpart, he asked me, he was like, oh, when you went to the river, did you see the sirens, or all these other different water spirits? It will take hours to explain all these stories, but yeah, so I want to go to Egypt next, because I can only imagine how I will feel, and I thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Iya. That concludes all of the questions. Okay. At this time, I know you were interested to share some footage of the festival, and we have about 15 minutes for that in your closing remarks, if you'd like to.
Okay, yes. And if anyone has to contact me, and I will get you some footage. But let me share my screen again. I'm trying to figure out which one I will share first. I'm going to do let me see if this movie, that movie is not up. I had some pictures that I wanted to share from the Congo, but there it goes. Let me turn this down. Okay. It looks like it came up. The music is horrible. I did it on Google Photos at the last minute, so I'm gonna turn the music down, but I'm gonna let y'all see the footage from the Congo, some of the clips. So I'm sharing my screen, and you all can see that?
Yes, okay. We can.
Okay, so let me start back. Please excuse the music, because I didn't have time to edit it. So that was just a couple of pictures. Try to minimize that. And then this is from Savannah. Now my son created this video for us after that festival. Let's see if I can get it to come up and play. Thank you. To share. I hope y'all enjoyed it. still there?
Yes, Sia, we're still here.
So, yep. So that's it. That's all I have. I hope I was able to give everyone more than they expected. And this was just something very personal for me because of my Congolese ancestors. They had me working on this all the way up until the last hour. So, you know, I hope I was able to bring some enlightenment to everyone. And I thank you all so much.
Well, we thank you. In fact, you over-delivered. I mean, we all learned so much. And of course, on behalf of Yeye Tish, we thank you for joining us and just sharing your wisdom. I know it's a blessing to many to help us further along on our journey. So thank you. Many blessings and great success in your good, good, good work. Even I will be reaching out to you.
Yes. So thank you. Thank you. And of course, to Yeye Tish. That's my E-R right there. I love Yeye.
Ashe. So I'm going to open up the volume so everyone can just kind of say goodbye before we part ways at this time. All right. Well, actually, you control it. You're controlling it. So you all just unmute yourselves and say your greetings.
Thank you.
Bye. I love y'all. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Peace.
Peace.